Hello, I'm Mina, a presenter on the Black Country Talking News, and this week's edition is for the 17th of March 2021.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by sightloss charity Beacon Centre. A message to our listeners who receive the Talking News on CD in the post: this remains in paper envelopes and not the usual plastic wallets, so there's still no need to send anything back to us. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. All you need to do is say, "Alexa, play Black Country Talking News." Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods: calling 01902 213 210, visiting our website www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast on the Black Country Radio website www.blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcasts, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by simply searching Beacon Black Country Talking News and hitting the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Thank you, Simon. And reading this week, we have myself, Rob, writer Graham Fisher, Mina, Ed, Pete, Helen, Simon, Liz, Christine, Ian, Angela, and of course, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have an update from Beacon, some local news from the Black Country. We have the Flashback Quiz with Mina, news from West Bromwich Albion and Wolves, a Did You Know section from Flashback Roger, a look at the upcoming 2021 census, the weather, an edition of Sounds of Nature, information about cataracts, and rounding all that off, another one of Graham Fisher's Tales from the Barn. But we start with some local news, brought to us by Angela, Ian and Christine.
Plans for a multi-million pound West Midlands Police superstation in the Black Country are set to move forward after being delayed due to red tape. A plot of land on Hall Street, Dudley, has been earmarked to become a main police base for the region since 2019 and was originally planned to open this year. But amid a row between council bosses and police chiefs, the project has met with a series of logjams, and as yet no planning application has been submitted despite a price for the land being agreed. Local leaders today vowed to get shovels in the ground to turn the project into a reality. However, a number of issues still need to be ironed out, including the removal of a public footpath on the land and a dispute over the site's boundaries. Lord Austin campaigned for a new police station in the town when he was Dudley North MP, saying the development was vital to cut crime. The station, thought to be £30 million, is expected to serve as a Black Country Police HQ and will feature a public-facing front desk. Dudley Town Centre has been without a police station since late 2017, when the station on New Street closed as part of cost-cutting plans by the force to save £8.6 million. The Hall Street site was earmarked for a large mosque for more than a decade, but following a series of disputes, the scheme collapsed due to financial issues. Labour councillor Kieran Casey, who in 2019 campaigned for the station alongside then Dudley North MP Ian Austin, said he was pleased to hear that the scheme finally looked like it was about to get off the ground. He said, "It is welcome news that Dudley Council are finally going to end their dithering and delaying, addressing any questions about their land, so the police can get on and build this much-wanted new station at the heart of the town."
Forcing health and frontline social care staff to have the COVID-19 vaccine would be a dangerous way to go, an NHS hospital chief has said. Professor David Larton, Chief Executive of the Royal Wolverhampton NHS Trust, which employs 10,500 people, said his organisation was having to have one-to-one conversations with staff about having the jab. But he said it was not unusual for there to be a vaccine reticence, and it followed a pattern already recognised within health bodies from when the annual flu jab season comes around. He said, "Lots of people cannot wait to get their vaccination, but there will be others who will need to have more information, and I'm sure we'll get to a better place." Professor Larton was speaking to journalists on Friday during a weekly regional COVID-19 briefing alongside other political and health leaders. The hospital trust chief said it was hard to believe it was a year this week that the West Midlands suffered its first death from COVID-19. "I don't think we could have ever envisaged that we would have 125,000 deaths." But he added, the NHS had done a brilliant job during its most difficult year ever. He added that the vaccination rollout was going spectacularly well.
Council bosses in the Black Country have forecasted multi-million pound deficits in their upcoming budgets due to the COVID pandemic. It comes after the government spending watchdog said coronavirus has delivered a £9.7 billion hit to local authorities across the country. Sandwell Council has predicted a shortfall of £13.8 million for the upcoming financial year of 2021-22. Meanwhile, Wolverhampton Council is forecasting a deficit of £29.6 million by 2023-24. Figures have not been provided by the councils of Dudley, Staffordshire or Walsall. The onset of the coronavirus pandemic has created additional financial pressures for councils. The National Audit Office said support from central government following the coronavirus outbreak last year had managed to avert a system-wide financial failure. However, it said local government finances remain a cause for concern, with many councils facing the prospect of cutting services in order to balance the books. Wolverhampton's Cabinet Member for Resources, Councillor Louise Miles, said, "With no clarity over future years' funding from government and a forecast deficit of almost £30 million by 2023-24, we are always having to look ahead to see how we can bridge that gap. We set our budget for 2021-22 last week, but immediately we are now looking at what needs to be done to balance the books in the future." Dudley's Cabinet Member for Finance, Councillor Steve Clark, said, "In the short term, we have received significant funding to support our work in tackling the impact of coronavirus. In the longer term, we will continue to balance the investment needed to provide hundreds of services and providing value for money for everyone in Dudley Borough."
Stopping young people falling into the clutches of gangs as the region emerges from lockdown will be top priority for police, says Sir David Thompson. The Chief Constable of West Midlands Police said tackling violent crime was top of the pile of priorities post-COVID. He said he was concerned about the shocking nature of some of the violence young people were involved in and vowed to task new officers with confronting the issue head-on. It comes as the Home Office granted the force another £3 million to help tackle violent crime. Violent crime went up by more than a fifth in the West Midlands in the year up to September 2020, a period where most other types of crime fell drastically due to lockdown measures. Sir David said he had serious concerns that with young people having been out of school, more of them would get involved in crime, including county lines drug dealing. "There is a danger of young people drifting into the world of gangs. A lot of the extra officers we are receiving in the uplift will be going into serious organised crime exploitation and local teams specifically to tackle that. It's a long-term challenge. The bit that worries me is the scale of some of the violence we have seen involving young people. It is shocking. It's a UK issue, and there are some broader societal issues about how young men in particular deal with conflict." Sir David said the force's violence reduction unit, which aims to intervene in young people's lives before they join gangs, would play a major role in reducing violence.
Housing bosses in Wolverhampton are taking steps to cut the cost of providing temporary accommodation for homeless families after spending more than £1.7 million on B&Bs and hotels over the last 12 months. The use of temporary emergency accommodation for families who became unintentionally homeless during 2020 to 2021 soared by more than 50%, with 252 placements made in the city compared to 123 in 2019 to 2020. This also accounted for the substantial increase in spending, which rose from just over £670,000 in 2019 to 2020. The local authority is now looking to approve the immediate use of 20 more council-owned homes for temporary housing, alongside the acquisition of an additional 50 disused properties to increase stock. Wolverhampton Homes, which provides the council's homelessness services, is responsible for the allocation and monitoring of all temporary accommodation in the city. In a report to the council's cabinet, Homelessness Strategy and External Relationships Manager Anthony Walker said, "A budget of between £8 million and £10 million will be required for the purchase of up to 50 units of additional properties and any repairs required to ensure that they are suitable for letting." As of the end of 2020, the portfolio of local authority-owned temporary accommodation comprised of 83 individual units, which could temporarily house up to 434 permitted occupants.
Three more local news bulletins coming up, but now it's time for our weekly update from Beacon.
Hi everyone, it's Helen, back with your weekly roundup of everything that's been going on at the Beacon Centre. I don't know about you, but it seems like we're whizzing through March already, which is no bad thing as we hopefully move towards COVID-19 restrictions being eased just a little bit at the end of a month. It also means that we're heading rapidly towards Easter. Have you bought your entries to our Easter raffle yet? With three amazing prizes, we think it's the sweetest one yet. One of the prizes up for grabs is a confectionery hamper kindly donated by Black Country favourite Teddy Gray's. The hamper contains a selection of their most popular sweets and is a real treat for all ages. You can view the full range on their website, www.teddygrays.co.uk, and entries to our raffle are £2 each. Get yours now. You can head to www.justgiving.com/fundraising/Beacon Easter Raffle. That's www.justgiving.com/fundraising/Beacon Easter Raffle. Each entry will help us support someone with sight loss when they need us the most. Terms and conditions apply, and our raffle closes on Tuesday, the 6th of April at midday. Now, we've been marking a lot of national events at Beacon recently. Earlier this month, it was No Smoking Day. Did you know that smoking can double your risk of developing age-related macular degeneration, one of the leading causes of sight loss? If you smoke, then why not make 2021 your year to quit? You won't regret it. For more information, search Smoke Free online. You may also know that letters inviting people to take part in the 2021 census are now dropping on doormats around the region ahead of Census Day on March 21st. The census is a survey that happens every 10 years and gives the Office for National Statistics key information about life in England and Wales. Information about the census is available in Braille and large print. If you need support to access it, then let us know. Call us on 01902 880 111 Mondays to Fridays. We also recently marked International Women's Day, the charity, by saying a huge thank you to all the amazing women in the Beacon family. This year's theme was Choose to Challenge, and there is no doubt that the past 12 months have been a challenge like no other. From our senior management team, which is predominantly female, to you, our women members who do so much to inspire us every day. We know how much everyone has juggled in the past year, and we thank you for going above and beyond. Research shows that women have borne much of a brunt of a COVID-19 pandemic, from childcare to mental health issues. But our Beacon family is pulled together to support each other through this crisis. From challenge comes change. That seems like a nice note to leave it on this week. Take care, stay safe, and hopefully I'll speak to you all again soon.
Thanks, Helen. We now head back to the local news. Reading for us, we have Ed, Christine, Angela, and at the top of the bill, it's Ian.
A worker at a Wolverhampton care home was told to stay at work after testing positive for COVID-19. The incident happened at the Leylands Residential Care Home in Penn and was discovered by officers from the Care Quality Commission after fears were raised about the quality of service at the premises. Another staff member was encouraged by the management team to return to work after being in contact with a person who had tested positive for COVID-19, the checkup also found. However, care home owner Bal Bisla has hit back at the CQC findings and called the report very unfair. "We had one very small isolated episode in late December and we controlled it. No one went to hospital and no one died. We're in the middle of a pandemic. I asked for help and got nothing from the CQC or the clinical commissioning group. I've challenged this report as I believe it's very unfair," he said. "I want everyone to know we are very, very strict on COVID safeguarding and our staff follow the government guidelines to the letter. They do everything possible to ensure everyone in the home gets the best care possible." Mr. Bisla said that since the inspection took place, a new manager had been appointed. An inspector from the CQC visited the Penrode premises on January the 26th after receiving reports of residents not being safeguarded from potential harm, abuse and neglect.
The owners of a Dudley pub have been ordered to pay more than £10,000 after environmental health officers found evidence of mice at the premises. The Bramford Arms in Woodsetton was inspected in October 2019. Environmental health officers found pest records which said there had been a problem with mice in the dry stores at the Park Road pub since July 2019, but work identified as necessary to remedy the problem had not been carried out. The operators of the pub, Green King Retail Limited, pleaded guilty to a single offence under food hygiene regulations at Dudley Magistrates Court. The company was fined £8,000 and ordered to pay court costs of £2,107 and a victim surcharge of £170. Green King apologised and told the court that the problems should have been addressed by the local management team, which had now been replaced. Councillor Nicholas Barlow, Dudley Council's Cabinet Member responsible for environmental health, said, "I welcome the decision of the court to impose this significant financial penalty. The premises had identified the problem themselves and put a plan in place to deal with it, but unfortunately our inspectors found this was never carried out. It potentially put the health of people eating there at risk, and the decision of the court sends out a warning to other pubs and restaurants to keep their premises clean or face a heavy financial penalty."
Wolves boss Nuno Espirito Santo has made an impassioned plea to fans to get their COVID-19 jab as soon as they're invited to have it. He described the vaccine as a key factor in a return to normality. Nuno said, "I truly believe one of the key factors for us to get back to normal as fast as possible is for as many people as possible to get the vaccine. We are desperate to get back to normal, and the more people who get the vaccine, the better. I don't have any kind of doubts about it. It's approved, and I can see by individuals here that it's safe. Ron Picken, our kit man, is much happier having had it. He feels more safe, and by seeing him every day, I know it's okay." Although Nuno has not had the vaccine yet himself, he is keen to do so when it is his turn. "I hope too soon, but I'm young. I'm not in that eligible group yet." Nuno recognised the impact coronavirus has had on members of Black, Asian and minority ethnic BAME communities and encouraged everyone to get vaccinated. He added, "I'm BAME and I wish that I could have the vaccine. I say to everybody, not only the BAME community, that the vaccine is a key step for easing restrictions. It's a key step for us to get back to normal. I wish there were available vaccines back in Portugal. We are facing a situation there that we don't have enough vaccines. But here we have vaccines. I'm wishing that everybody all over the world has it so we can travel and go back to see our families again." Councillor Jasbir Jaspal, Wolverhampton Council's Cabinet Member for Health and Public Wellbeing, said, "We are grateful for Nuno's support in encouraging everyone in the city to have their vaccination. As the best way out of the pandemic, the sooner we are all vaccinated, the sooner we can return to a more normal way of life, and the sooner fans can enjoy their football, either at Molyneux or down their local pub."
A councillor has welcomed proposals that will criminalise illegal encampments on land. Councillor Simon Phipps, who represents Belvale Ward on Dudley Council, reacted to the plans discussed by the government. The plans, which are set to be signed off by Home Secretary Priti Patel, will make it a criminal offence to live in vehicles on land without permission and to cause distress to communities. It comes after illegal encampments in Whittingham Road, Howes Owen, several times between 2016 to 2019. Each encampment resulted in damage to the open space owned by a local secondary school, costing more than £35,000 to put right. Councillor Phipps said, "I am delighted that this long overdue change in the law will be brought forward. Residents not just in Belvale but across the Dudley Borough have had to endure their parks and open spaces being occupied and damaged by some who feel the law doesn't apply to them. That injustice led me to writing to the Home Secretary about this issue in October 2019. These new powers will be a game changer for landowners across the country who would previously have had to wait for a court order to evict illegal encampments, even if they broke onto the property and were causing damage to it."
The Mayor of Dudley has opened a new food stall which has created 47 new jobs in the borough. Company Shop Dudley on Castle Mill Birmingham New Road was officially opened by Councillor David Stanley. The store will offer top food brands and goods at discounted prices. Key workers, school and council workers and families on benefits can become members at the store. Membership is free and is open to almost all key workers. The firm has also extended membership to those in receipt of means-tested benefits, including families with children receiving free school meals. Company Shop work on the basis of avoiding waste by taking surplus food and goods from other stores and selling it at an average of half price. None of the food is past its sell-by date, and the company says there are many reasons why goods become surplus, including overstocking and incorrect or wonky labelling and seasonal packaging. Councillor Stanley said, "I was delighted to be able to attend the official opening of Company Shop, a fantastic supermarket which is going to be a very welcome addition to our borough. I believe around 8,000 people have already signed up to be members. Innovative shops like this have become more important with people struggling during the pandemic, and it will be a benefit to a lot of people in the borough. I would encourage people who are eligible, including our own staff, to get signed up and go and have a look at the great offers."
We have two more news updates coming up, but now it's time to cross over to Mina.
Hello and welcome to the Flashback Quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, here are your questions. Are you ready? Question 1. How long, on average, is it said to take a bloke to get fed up with shopping? Question 2. How many hours of telly is equal to one recycled can? Question 3. How many bees followed their lost queen bee? Question 4. Why can't a crocodile stick its tongue out? Question 5. What was the rank of William Windsor in the British Army? And question 6. How can you make an apple, potato and an onion all taste the same? As always, I'll be back to reveal the answers later in the show, but for now, good luck.
Thanks, Mina. Coming up next, we have some more local news, brought to us by Ed, Angela, Ian, and at the top of the bill, it's Christine.
The West Midlands Mayor says investment and major projects will help a city overcome its economic challenges and thrive after the pandemic. Andy Street said he had been busy levelling up the West Midlands for the past 4 years and claimed he had helped land the investment required to see Wolverhampton compete on the national stage. Defending his track record, Conservative Mr Street pointed to a number of projects that were transforming the city, including the £150 million transport interchange, the Warsaw-Wolverhampton railway line, and the National Brownfield Institute at the former Springfield Brewery. He said more than £40 million from the Future High Streets Fund and the Towns Fund would drive the city economy forward, while the opening of a new Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government headquarters would result in a major boost for local trade. Liam Byrne, MP, Labour's candidate for mayor, said, The region had missed out on funding which had gone to the north. He also accused Mr. Street of failing to secure the vast majority of the government cash required for his £3.2 billion economic recovery plan. Mr. Street, who is bidding for a second term as mayor in May's election, said Wolverhampton was buzzing with good news and progress at the moment. He said the city was being transformed and that investment and major projects are set to propel Wolverhampton's recovery. Wolverhampton has faced many economic challenges. The collapse of Carillion hit the city hard, and the closure of the iconic Beatty's department store provided a powerful symbol of the problems faced by its city centre, Mr. Street said. Throughout the pandemic, those challenges have continued, with key employers heavily affected by the economic impact of COVID-19, such as aerospace firms Collins or hospitality giant Marston's. But these last few months have shown by working effectively with government and employing the full power of devolved decision-making, we can secure the resources and investment needed to not only compete regionally, but nationally too.
A beer garden, which pub owners say is needed to save their business after the COVID pandemic, will have to be closed off. The Kingsbridge Bar in Wollaston has been refused backdated planning permission for an outside seating area following complaints of noisy customers after it opened its doors in September last year. Supporters of the pub on the junction of King Street and Bridge North Road pleaded the beer garden was needed to help it survive when lockdown restrictions are lifted. Regulars had rallied to its defence with 70 letters of support, claiming the bar was a great place to visit, is family and couples friendly and well run. But councillors on Dudley Council's Development Committee backed planning officers' recommendation to refuse planning permission. Kat Eccles, saying the beer garden should stay, said the bar had only been open 8 weeks before it was forced to close during the national lockdown in October. Claiming the owners had worked closely with local residents and planning officers, she said, "They want to continue to work with the community to ensure it becomes a valuable asset set in Wollaston." The outdoor area is particularly important given the recent government decision on meeting people from other households indoors, and while this situation will change in time, the outdoor area will remain an essential part of the business. The proposed change of use will therefore help support a business in these uncertain times due to the pandemic. Councillor Khurshid Ahmed agreed pubs had suffered during COVID and needed support, but councillors had to consider the residents, adding, "Noise can be controlled in private parties, but in commercial business such as this, where people come from different walks of life, when they have had a few drinks, you cannot control them and you cannot control the noise." The committee voted overwhelmingly to refuse the application.
The chief executive of Wolverhampton Pubs Company, Marston's, is stepping down on September the 30th after 20 years in the post. Marston's board has been advised by Ralph Findlay of his intention to finish at the end of the current financial year. The process to appoint his successor is underway, and the group, which operates an estate of around 1,500 pubs across the country and employs 11,000 people, says that a further announcement will be made in due course. William Rucker, chairman of Marston's, said, "Ralph has been CEO of Marston's since 2001 and is one of the longest-serving business leaders in an industry which has seen significant change and challenges during that time. Ralph is widely respected and admired by all those in the hospitality industry, and I have thoroughly enjoyed working with him over the last 3 years. He has overseen the development of Marston's into one of the leading pub companies in the UK. Through operational innovation to drive change and also transforming the business through strategic acquisition. Most recently, Ralph was instrumental in the formation of the joint venture with Carlsberg UK, and the agreement to operate the SA Brain pub estate in Wales. He has guided the company through this last extremely challenging year to ensure it is ready to reopen as a purely focused pub operator with a substantially strengthened balance sheet. He leaves Marston's in excellent shape and well positioned to rebuild trading and go from strength to strength when restrictions are lifted."
A Star Chef competition to help students stay creative and expand their skills has been launched. Students studying professional cookery, patisserie and confectionery at Hales Owen will be designing and cooking a dish which will be used in the college's own restaurant, Bistro at B63. Learners will cost their dish, take a photo of it and send it in with an email describing their creation. Champion chef Stuart Dealey will help lecturer Chris Hughes choose the best 8 entrants. Students will be taking part in a live cook-off after the Easter break. Mr. Hughes said this competition is through Stuart Dealey's Professional Chefs Academy in college. It is great to see Stuart's support to pick the best dishes. This will really get our level 2 learners thinking about their skills, ingredients and coming up with something really special. They will be mentored by Jack Gameson from college, who has extensive national competition experience. The college and cutlery maker Grunberg are sponsoring the competition. The partnership means students can win additional equipment, cookery books and vouchers for taking part.
A photographer who captured the image of an otter swimming in a Wolverhampton canal recently had only been taking pictures for 2 weeks beforehand, he has revealed. Surinder Joshua Durrock took the photo of the rare semi-aquatic mammal in the Wyalee and Essington Canal at Bentley Bridge, Wensfield, after being tipped off by the wife of a local fisherman. More commonly at home in Britain's rivers, otters are one of the UK's rarest and most elusive mammals, being absent from our waterways for more than half a century. Since being published, Mr. Durrock's photo has attracted national media interest as well as garnering widespread public attention. He said, "A lady from the BBC called me to talk about the story and said, 'You must have been photographing wildlife for quite a few years then.' And I had to admit that I'd only got the camera 2 weeks earlier. Before that, in no way, shape or form would I have described myself as a photographer. Although since getting that photo, I've taken my photography to a new level and I really am concentrating on it now. It was a freezing day when I took the photograph. There was a man fishing along the canal and his wife said they were going to pack up and go home because an otter was eating the fish. I couldn't believe what she'd just told me and asked which way it had gone. She pointed and I followed, spotted it and eventually caught up behind the Nickelodeon pub. I was determined to get that photo." Mr. Durrock, who originally hails from Scotland and moved to Wolverhampton from Kent in 2018, added, "Otters are one of Britain's most elusive mammals and move incredibly fast through the water. It was so cold that part of the canal had frozen over and the otter was just yards away from swimming under the ice."
Now we hear from Pete, who has for us this week information about cataracts.
A cataract is a clouding of the normally clear lens of your eye, making your vision cloudy and blurred. A cataract can form over many years. When we're young, our lenses are usually like clear glass, so we can see through them. And as we get older, they start to become cloudy. So vision can be like looking through net curtains or frosted glass. Cataracts can affect both or one eye. And in the UK, age-related cataracts affect around half of people aged 65 and above and can affect ability to carry out daily activities. It can also affect children too. However, this is rare. The main symptoms are blurred, cloudy vision, seeing halos around lights, increasing difficulty with vision at night, sensitivity to light and glare, need for brighter light for reading and other activities, fading or yellowing of colours, and sometimes double vision in a single eye. Cataracts can affect your ability to drive, with nighttime driving becoming difficult due to bright lights and the glare of oncoming traffic and headlights. You don't need to tell the DVLA if you have or previously had cataracts, but you still need to meet the visual standards for driving. For those who have cataracts, you may notice a change in your prescription for your glasses or lenses happening more often. It's not entirely clear why we're more likely to develop cataracts as we get older, but some things may increase the risk of cataracts, including a family history of cataracts. Smoking, long-term use of steroids, drinking too much alcohol, getting older, excessive exposure to sunlight, obesity, high blood pressure, previous eye injury or inflammation, or previous eye surgery. The symptoms of cataracts can also develop from diabetes or glaucoma. No studies have proved how to prevent cataracts, but suggestions are stop smoking, reduce alcohol, manage other health problems, choose a healthy diet that includes plenty of fruit and vegetables, and wear sunglasses that offer UV protection, as ultraviolet light from the sun may contribute to the development of cataracts. If you feel changes in your vision, speak to your optician so they can examine your eyes in detail. If your cataracts are manageable, stronger glasses and brighter reading lights may help for a while. But cataracts get worse over time, and there is only one way the condition can be treated, and that's through surgery to remove and replace the affected lens. Cataract surgery is a straightforward procedure that usually takes 30 to 45 minutes. It's often carried out as day surgery under local anaesthetic, and you should be able to go home on the same day. The replacement artificial lens will usually have a single point of focus, meaning the lens will be fixed for either near or distance vision, but not both. However, sometimes you may be able to choose a lens which focuses on both, that's both near and distant objects. Talk to your consultant about the type of lens available first. Most people will still need to wear glasses and may need a new prescription after surgery, and it can take 2 to 6 weeks to fully recover. There are risks with all surgery, and you should again talk with your consultant beforehand. But after cataract surgery, you should be able to see things in focus again, be able to cope with bright light and glare better. Colours will become clear and sharp once more, and you'll have an improved quality of life.
Cheers for that, Pete. Now we have some more local news, brought to us by Ian, Christine, Ed, and starting us off, it's Angela.
The Voice winner Blessing Anatoria has announced the release of her debut album just 5 months after winning the hit show. She wowed millions of fans across the UK and was crowned the 9th winner of the ITV show last year after being coached by Ollie Murs. Now the 18-year-old vocal powerhouse from Dudley, formerly known as Blessing Chutapa, will become the youngest ever winner in the show's history to release an album with Count My Blessings in April. And the former King's Winford School pupil, whose parents are pastors at Cornerstone Fellowship International Church in West Bromwich, will be back on The Voice UK for its final next week to launch the first single from the album called I Smile. At the time of her TV whirlwind, Blessing was living in Russell's Hall, Dudley, with her parents, sister and brother, studying chemistry, biology and physics online at Dudley College. She loved singing in church, but had plans to study biomedical sciences at university. But then, in just one night, the teen's entire life was flipped upside down when she was crowned the winner, sending her soaring into the spotlight. Her debut album will be a gospel-infused record featuring a selection of 14 songs representing all facets of Blessing Anatoria as an artist. Blessing said, "This album is a complete blend of songs that I connected with from a young age and also songs that I've listened to recently. I'm so privileged to have been able to put my own twist on hymns that I listened to when I was back in Zimbabwe. Who would have known that years later I would be releasing them as my own music?"
Trees are to be planted across the Black Country thanks to a £183,000 cash boost from the Woodland Trust. The Black Country Consortium, which covers the areas of Dudley, Sandwell, Wolverhampton and Walsall, will benefit from the charity's Emergency Tree Fund, set up to encourage local authorities to make trees a central part of their policies and boost tree cover to tackle climate change. The Black Country will use the funding to develop an eye tree plan, looking at where trees are needed, for example, to combat flooding near schools, boost air quality and create more green spaces. It will also see a comprehensive assessment of the area's tree stock. Sarah Middleton, Chief Executive, Black Country Consortium, said, "The Black Country is working with partners to support and implement green strategies, from leading the way nationally in industrial clean energy for small and medium-sized businesses to developing our plans around tree planting thanks to this funding from the Woodland Trust. We look forward to working with our partners to ensure trees are at the heart of all our green strategies as we all work to deliver on our carbon zero targets. In total, £2.9 million will be going to councils across the country. It is a key part of the charity's aim to plant 50 million trees by 2025. John Tucker, the Woodland Trust's Director of Woodland Outreach, said, "The Woodland Trust has launched an emergency tree fund to provide vital funding to help make these green projects a reality."
A badger needed a helping hand after getting stuck inside a piece of machinery on a construction site in Dudley. RSPCA Animal Rescue Officer Cara Gibbons was called to the building site off Martin Hill Street on Monday after workers arrived to start work and made the discovery. She said workers arrived at the site after a relaxing weekend to find the badger curled up, sleeping underneath a power float machine. He had climbed through a gap at the top of the machine and fallen into it before curling up and enjoying a little nap. He was covered by a tarpaulin, so it was probably nice and warm and cosy in there. The power float machine, or power trowel, is used by contractors to apply a smooth finish to concrete slabs. Ms. Gibbons added, "I think he had been out exploring over the weekend when the site was quiet and closed down. He probably found something interesting at the bottom, so climbed inside, through the gap in the top where the machine meets the handle, and got himself stuck inside. He was fast asleep when I got there, so I was able to check him over before the workmen helped me lift up the machinery and he scurried off in a bit of a hurry. It was a lovely rescue for a Monday morning and certainly put smiles on the faces of all the builders."
A mosaic of tissue paper in the image of Sir Captain Tom Moore has been made by children at a Tetnell school. The 30 pupils from years 3 to 6 at Palmer's Cross Primary School spent 2 weeks creating their amazing artwork. Now it is to be exhibited on the wall of the main corridor within the school buildings. It has been made by children of key workers, and the artwork will now be seen by visitors to the school. Teacher Mrs. Charlotte Priest helped inspire pupils to create the picture of the man who became a national icon. "Sir Captain Tom Moore became known for lifting the spirits of the nation by doing laps of his garden with his stroller during the pandemic and raised millions of pounds for the National Health Service charities." Assistant Principal Jane Cox said, "The idea of the artwork initially came from Mrs. Priest. She drew the outline of the mosaic. Pupils then used coloured tissue paper to create the collage. The picture measures about 5 feet by 3 feet in dimensions. It is really an amazing resemblance to photographs of Sir Captain Tom Moore. Even the pupils were impressed by how good it looks. People were saddened by Sir Captain Tom Moore's passing, and the children recognised him from his television appearances and from all his achievements. Everyone is delighted by the artwork, which will eventually go on display in the main corridor of the school."
A new beer that will appear to Kiwis has been launched in the Black Country in special all-black cans in honour of New Zealand's rugby side. Pacific Pils is the first lager to have been created by Stourbridge's Green Duck Brewing Company. Brewing director and head brewer Alex Hill says that it had been brewed using Pacifica hops from New Zealand. The brewery at Gainsborough Industrial Estate, Rufford Road, is producing the 4.4% strength beer in cans only during the lockdown. Green Duck normally shows rugby union internationals in the Badderling Bar on the brewery site. The brewing company last year ran a successful crowdfunding campaign to buy a new canning machine with Coventry's Twisted Barrel Brewery and Tap House, another independent brewer. The brewery has also just launched home delivery cocktails at £5 each or 5 for £20, including favourites like Pina Colada, Tom Collins and the Old Fashioned. Orders can be made on their website, greenduckbrewery.co.uk.
Now it's time to hear from Flashback Roger, who asked for us some more amazing facts.
Everybody, it's Rod here again with this week's batch of unusual facts and events from far and wide that I hope will be of interest, entertain, and if you're like me, find them a bit educating. So if you're sitting comfortably, pin back your lug holes and I'll kick off with this one. The average male gets bored of a shopping trip after 26 minutes. On top of this, it's been found that 8 in 10 men hate shopping with their partner. Meanwhile, women don't get tired of shopping until around 2 hours have passed. Interestingly, it was also found that men who were promised some sort of treat at the end of the joint shopping trip were more likely to last and pretend to enjoy the shopping with their partner. So next time you see a couple in a retail store with a bored-looking partner, you'll know that they've been out there for more than half an hour. And recycling just one tin saves enough energy to watch television for 3 hours. Yep, that's how important recycling is. In fact, recycling an aluminium can into a new one takes just 5% of the energy required to produce one normally. The average person has the chance to recycle 25,000 cans in their lifetime. That's 75,000 hours of television. In fact, it's estimated that every 3 months the US throws away enough aluminium that if recycled could be used to build the US entire fleet of commercial aircraft. A swarm of 20,000 bees followed a car for 2 days because their queen was stuck inside. A 68-year-old grandmother got quite a surprise on her return from a visit to a nature reserve. It seems that somehow a queen bee was curious and got trapped inside her car. On her way home, she parked her car to go shopping, only to return to a car covered in bees. The bees were safely removed from the car, and the lovely old lady made her way home. Much to her surprise, the bees were back the next day. It seems that the queen bee was still inside, and the bees followed her the whole way home again. The article doesn't tell us where this strange event happened, though, but the second time round they were all removed, and they fortunately didn't return. Fascinating, this one is. A crocodile can't poke its tongue out because their tongues are attached to the roof of their mouths. Crocodiles cannot stick their tongues out, although their very similar counterparts, alligators, can. While this may seem more useless than useful, it's actually quite convenient for crocodiles, as they can't bite their tongues while snapping their powerful jaws together. Ain't nature marvellous? A goat called William Windsor served as a lance corporal in the British Army. William, Billy Windsor I, served in the 1st Battalion Infantry Unit of the Royal Welsh between 2001 and 2009. He was briefly demoted to Fusilier after unacceptable behaviour at the Queen's official birthday celebrations, before regaining his rank as Lance Corporal. Billy was not the first, and will certainly not be the last goat to serve in the Royal Welsh, as the tradition goes back to 1844. Following Billy's retirement, he has since been replaced by a younger goat named William Windsor II. An apple, potato and onion all taste the same if you eat them with your noses plugged. It's commonly known now that at least 80% of your sense of taste actually comes from our senses of smell. Because of this, if you were to block the sense of smell, many things actually would taste the same, or at least pretty damn close. In this case, it's been tested on many different people who were blindfolded and had their noses plugged. The results were that the participants couldn't distinguish between the three other than from their texture. Well, there you are, folks, another six interesting and absolutely useless facts that you can use to amaze your friends. Anyway, I'm off for a cuppa and dig up some more items for the coming weeks. But for now, this is Rod saying bye for now. Ta-ra!
Thanks, Roger. Now we head over to Mina with the weather forecast for the week ahead.
The weather for this week ahead will be mostly settled and dry, perfect for getting out in the garden. Temperatures across the week will be typical for the time of year. Low UV levels are expected. The sunrise and sunset times are 6:07 a.m. for the sunrise and 6:24 p.m. for the sunset. For Friday 19th of March all the way through to Tuesday 23rd of March, we have light cloud and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 12 degrees. On Wednesday 24th of March, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 13 degrees. And on Thursday 25th of March, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 12 degrees. So that's your forecast for the week. And as always, enjoy the weather.
Cheers for that weather update. And now it's time for another edition of Sounds of Nature, which this week is presented by Mina.
Male skylarks can be spotted rising almost vertically from farmland, grassland, salt marshes and moorland. They hover, singing from a great height, before parachuting back down to earth. These long and complicated song flights can last for up to an hour, and the birds can reach 300 miles. Despite their aerial activities, skylarks nest on the ground, laying 3 to 4 eggs. Chicks can become independent after only 2 weeks, and parents can have up to 4 broods in a breeding season.
This recording was made by Lawrence Shove and was made available by the British Library. Coming up next, we have Ian with the sport.
Hello, I'm Ian, and here's your latest football news. Goalkeeper Rui Patricio was forced off with a head injury later on as Wolves lost 1-0 to Liverpool, courtesy of former Molineux favourite Diogo Jota. In eerily similar fashion to Raul Jimenez's injury at Arsenal earlier this season, Patricio appeared to be knocked unconscious after colliding with Connor Cody. The Portuguese was tended to by medics for a lengthy period before having to be taken off on a stretcher with a neck brace on. Jota got the decisive goal on his first game back at Molineux amid a positive Wolves performance, but the focus is on Patricio and hoping the issue is not too serious. The condition of Patricio is the primary concern of everyone of a Wolves persuasion and beyond, after an accidental coming together with Cody. It was a sickening incident, just as Jimenez's was at the Emirates only a matter of months ago. You could argue it is one that could have been avoided if assistant referees were not instructed to delay raising the offside flag these days too. The serious nature of that moment overshadowed the rest of the game, it must be said. It was worrying. Jota, as many may have suspected, was on the mark against his old club, with a quick counter-attack on the stroke of half-time catching Wolves cold in an otherwise encouraging display. Nuno Espirito Santo's side displayed good intensity throughout, and credit to them, even applied pressure after Patricio's injury. They made the Reds work very hard for the 3 points, and there were positives for the Wolves' chief to take from this going into the international break for sure. But the main priority above all is getting Patricio the care that he needs and wishing him a healthy recovery. Albion's disappointing Premier League campaign continued after they were beaten at Crystal Palace. A penalty from Luka Milivojević was enough to earn all 3 points for Roy Hodgson's side in a game that lacked quality and spark at Selhurst Park. Albion did play the better football of the two teams, with Allardyce's side particularly bright in the opening half hour. But they gifted the hosts the lead in the 37th minute when Darnell Furlong handled a cross from Wilfried Zaha in the box. Milivojević tucked the penalty away to give Palace something to hold on to. But despite Allardyce saying before kickoff that this was a must-win game for his side, the Baggies created very little from that point. Conor Gallagher and Matt Phillips both had half chances to pull a goal back, but the penalty aside, neither team truly looked like scoring. The result leaves Albion 8 points from safety and with an inferior goal difference with just 9 games remaining.
Cheers for that, Ian. Now head over to Liz, who has for us a feature on the census.
It's census time. This month, every household in England and Wales will be asked to take part in the nation's biggest survey to help government plan for future needs. This year marks the 220th anniversary since the first modern census was held. But there is a major difference with this year's study. For the first time, it will be predominantly carried out over the internet. The Office for National Statistics, which runs Census 2021, is working with councils across the West Midlands to carry out the survey, which takes place on March the 21st. And if you haven't had a note through the door about it yet, you are likely to be getting one soon. The first full census of England was the Domesday Book. That was carried out on the orders of William the Conqueror in 1086. Several ad hoc censuses took place over the centuries that followed. In 1270, Edward I commissioned the 1279 to 1800 rolls, a national survey of landholdings in England, so called because data was collected from county divisions known as hundreds. There was also a 16th century effort where bishops were asked to count the number of families in their diocese. By the end of the 18th century, there called for a more formal national survey amid growing concern about the population of Britain and its demand for food. In 1798, Thomas Robert Malthus warned in his book, An Essay on the Principle of Population, that rapid population growth would lead to famine, prompting the presentation of the Census Bill to Parliament in November 1800. The bill received royal assent on December the 31st, and the first modern census was carried out on March the 10th, 1801, just 70 days after the law was passed. In 1801, census recorded the UK population at 10,942,646. Once the 324,630 soldiers serving in the army, the 144,558 personnel in the British Merchant Navy, and the 1,401 convicts on board the prison hulks were taken into account. Information from the early censuses was relatively sparse, and details such as occupation were only recorded for people in groups rather than individuals. For the 1841 census, households were issued with paper forms for the first time, on which they were legally required to record details of everyone who stayed in the household on census night. In 1851, the schedules required fuller information, including occupations. The 2021 census will be the 23rd since the Act was passed, with the surveys having been carried out every 10 years since, apart from in 1941, when it was interrupted by the Second World War. An extra census was carried out in 1966. Information gathered is used by central government and organisations, such as councils and health trusts, to plan and fund public services. Sandeep Dadley, engagement manager for Wolverhampton, says the census plays a crucial role in ensuring that people get the access to services they need. It provides a unique snapshot of the lives of everybody who is living in the community, he says. Having that understanding of who is living in different parts of the city aids organisations such as the government and the local authority in how it should be allocating funding to serve different communities. Mr. Dardley says that while people are being encouraged to fill out the questionnaire over the internet, paper forms will still be available for people who prefer to take part in that way. He says by now, most people in the city will have received a postcard through the letterbox informing them that they will be required to take part. This will be followed by a letter giving them an online passcode which will allow them to fill the form out over the internet. Those who prefer to fill out a paper form will be given a telephone number to contact people on. We are acutely aware that certain people from certain parts of the city don't have access to a laptop or other online devices, and in those areas, the census will be sent to some households in paper form. Mr. Dardley says it is not just government and public sector organisations which make use of the statistics. It could even be a supermarket chain which will use the data to look at how many disabled bays to provide at its store in a particular ward. I'm a proud Wolverhampton. I have lived in the area all my life, and before I did this, my background was in the charity sector, helping people from disadvantaged backgrounds, and census data was like gold dust. But while the results will be available next year, all personal data will be kept secret for the next 100 years. In Dudley, the 2011 census caused controversy over the way it broke the town up, so that outlying suburbs such as Sedgley, Gornal, Woodseton and Wall Heath were no longer counted as part of the town. This reduced the population of the town from 194,919 at the 2001 census to 79,379 in 2011, although the population of the wider borough rose from 305,100 to 313,260. Census 2021 will include questions about people's sex, age, work, health, education, household size and ethnicity. And for the first time, there will be a question asking people whether they have served in the armed forces, as well as voluntary questions for those aged 16 and over on sexual orientation and gender identity.
Thanks for that, Liz. It's now time to find out how many questions you got right in our flashback quiz. So, Mina, do you have the answers all lined up for us?
I do. So here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Are you ready? Question 1. How long on average is it said to take a bloke to get fed up with shopping? I love this answer. It's 26 minutes. Question 2. How many hours of telly is equal to one recycled can? And the answer is 3 hours. Question 3. How many bees followed their lost queen? And the answer here is 20,000. Question 4. Why can't a crocodile stick its tongue out? And the answer here is because it's fixed to the roof of its mouth. Question 5. What was the rank of William Windsor in the British Army? And the answer was Lance Corporal. And finally, question 6. How can you make an apple, potato and an onion all taste the same? And the answer is by plugging up your nose. How did you do? Great, I hope. But if not, there's always another chance to have another go next week. Now, to end this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, it's time to visit Graham Fisher to hear one of his tales from the barn.
Hello. In her debut novel, The Best We Could Do, Vietnamese author T. Bui postulates that proximity and closeness are not the same. While she penned this in considerably different circumstances, and I won't spoil the book for potential readers by revealing what hers were, the expression came to mind recently when I was invited to write a piece for a magazine on the subject of our great river highways. These venerable arteries of communication predate our railways and motorways by thousands of years, and, although no longer asserting influence as they once did, still play their part in our lives. Perhaps, hush my mouth, we're so accustomed to them that we take them for granted. Until, that is, one hot summer may agitate us into fears of hosepipe bans and abstraction restrictions as we peer skywards for signs of replenishing rain. Whereupon serenity and, inevitably, complacency resume. Our rivers are facing challenges that will doubtless provide me with ammunition for thought on other occasions. But for now, and minded of T. Bui's words, I compare and contrast just two of these great river highways in an association that is not quite so arbitrary as may first appear. George Henry Borrow, 1803 to 1881, stands judgment with anyone of his generation in being a quite remarkable man. Born in Norfolk, the son of an army recruiting officer and a farmer's daughter, he studied law until languages and literature consumed him, and thereafter he wrote novels and travelogues based on his experiences of meandering around Europe. In 1825, he undertook his first such journey and, over the ensuing years, visited Portugal, Spain, Morocco and Russia. He married in 1840, but continued to travel. However, it was after a family holiday in Llangollen in 1854 that he focused on Wales. He explored the country extensively, alone and on foot, and his book, Wild Wales, Its People, Language and Scenery, was published in 1862. Although not a popular seller at its launch, it has come to be regarded as a contemporary social and geographical history that has been described as robust, dramatic and cheerful, with its author an agreeably eccentric, larger-than-life jovial man whose laughter rings throughout the book. Barrow makes much of his self-taught ability to speak Welsh, and in attempting the same feat myself, learning Welsh, my respect for his linguistic skills is considerable. But back to his travels through Wales, and in particular, his explorations around the Cambrian Mountains to the peaks of Plinlimmon, which he confirms as the third in Wales for altitude, being inferior only to Snowdon and Cader Idris. At the highest point of Plinlimmon, about 2,500 feet above sea level, he cautions, "If you climb here alone and break a leg, you may die before they find you." From this bleak, inhospitable landscape, he notes, a little pool of water some 25 inches long, 6 inches wide and about 3 feet deep. It is covered at the bottom with small stones from between which the water gushes up. Barrow is describing what he believes to be the source of the River Severn, for centuries the preeminent river navigation of the UK. Swelling as it collects water from tributaries on its rapid descent towards Kersuas, the infant Severn, known locally as Haffrin, heads northwards towards Shrewsbury and once emptied into the Dee estuary until the retreat of glaciers at the end of the last ice age around 10,000 years ago dammed its course to form Lake Lapworth, named after the geologist who discovered it. The lake burst its banks and the water gushed southwards in an arc around Shrewsbury, thence carving its way via Ironbridge Gorge, Bridgnorth, Bewdley, Stourport, Worcester, Gloucester, the Bristol Channel and the Celtic Sea to Journey's End, where it melds into the Atlantic. On its travels, the Severn is swelled with water from numerous tributaries, not least the River Stour, which rises in Clent and was once pivotal in the development of Black Country industries before it succumbs to the Severn at Stourport. The Severn, a mighty river for sure. 220 miles that vary from wild and untamed with a rich diversity of flora and fauna to a bustling trade route that boasts the second highest tidal range in the world, beaten only by the Bay of Fundy in Nova Scotia. Although purists may point to the latest satellite information suggesting the latter's claim may not be entirely justified. Meanwhile, back on Plinlimmon, a pool, little more than a boggy patch, denotes the source of the infant River Wye. Its Latin name, Varga, which means wandering, is appropriate. Over the course of 156 miles, as measured by the Environment Agency, and forming the Welsh-English border for part of that length, it wanders through or past towns and villages, including Rhaeadr, Booth Wells, Hay-on-Wye. It passes the barn where I'm looking upon it right now, then to Hedeford, Ross-on-Wye, Simonjiat, Monmouth and Tintern, until it intrudes into the Severn, just below the fortress town of Chepstow. Now, like the Severn, the Wye has a transport heritage and was navigable to Glasbury, 5 miles upstream of Hay, albeit the tough and dangerous trade along it and its major tributary, the River Lug, ceased over a century and a half ago, with navigational artifacts such as locks largely removed in the interim. It too was industrialised in parts. In April 2009, Herefordshire Archaeology excavated the 17th century site of New Weir Ironworks at Simonjiat and discovered water-powered slitting and rolling mills. Naturally, both rivers share a degree of common currency, but go much beyond here, and the similarities become harder to reconcile. Quintessentially since, unlike its larger sibling, the Wye never wholly gifted its innocence. The Wye is variously a site of special scientific interest, a special area of conservation, and in the reach between Mordiford and Chepstow, an area of outstanding natural beauty that is regarded as one of the finest lowland landscapes in Britain. Nowadays, larger craft cannot penetrate much below the few miles to Tintern before bottoming out, and water-based activity further upstream is mostly restricted to canoeing, rowing and angling. In comparison, the Severn, though hardly devoid of wildlife and home to the internationally recognised Slimbridge Wetland Centre, is still routinely navigable to Stourport, with an ancient right of navigation extant to Pool Quay near Welshpool. Whilst the Severn is no laggard in the angling stakes, the Wye is easily one of the best salmon rivers in the UK, yielding specimens of over 50 pounds. It's not only salmon. In a display case over the door of the inn right opposite the barn lies a 22-pound 9-ounce pike caught locally in 1946. Not a record, but sufficient to impress. So, two rivers carving entirely differing courses and with individualistic pedigrees, yet ultimately conjoining in the Bristol Channel. Thus, I revert to the premise, the proximity and closeness are not the same. Spiritually or existentially, the Severn and the Wye could hardly be considered close. Yet their proximity is beyond dispute. They rise on the same barren peaks of Plinlimmon, a mere trek of a few minutes apart. So close in origins, yet so disparate, their paths diverging without reconciliation, save for their meeting once more at their denouement, their fates dictated simply by an accident of birth that places their sources on opposing sides of a watershed. Hence the Severn falling one way, the Wye and the infant river Rydal to the other. And the irony of our saga, indeed the heresy if it is to be believed, is that despite being aided by a local guide, Borrow may have identified the wrong Severn spring, having been confused by several pools nearby. Equally intriguing, in his charming book of 1968, Portrait of the Severn, author J.H.B. Peel proffers some doubt as to whether Borrow ever saw it at all. It's a matter for geologists, Peel records. I am content to know that somewhere near to this very place, the Severn does rise and shine. Enjoy your Black Country, and do join me again soon for more Tales from the Barn.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!